passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Rewind the dynamite from the most recent site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Rewind to Dynamite. John Pollock and Waiting here with you on a Wednesday evening. You can hear me. Can you see me? Hi, Way.
I can hear and I can see you, but I realized that was the exact same thing I said last time. So
let's not even bother to hope it goes well. Hope it goes well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. How are you, John?
Lots going on. Yes, it is another Wednesday night here. I never get used to this. I know that this is our recurring bit about how long Raw is and how busy, especially the 10 minutes before we go live for these Wednesday night shows. It's always just...
It's always a rush. Yeah, absolutely.
It really upsets my zen.
Remember when we used to do these like 15 minutes after?
Oh my God. We had it so good. We just like.
Remember when we weren't doing these live? Remember when we weren't doing these on video? You know, we just kind of like, you know, enjoyed our time.
There was a time we used to do our review shows the next morning.
Yeah. Can you believe that?
When we had lives, back when we had, could watch at our leisure. You could pop on Raw on a Tuesday morning and have it done.
In the future, I sense us doing the review before even actually watching the show. I think that's how fast we're going to get.
We'll go live at 9:30 p.m. as the final matches are going on.
Yeah.
Well, we have news to get into, but it's the first of the month. So everyone sit back because it's a big month at the Post Wrestling Cafe as we inch towards WrestleMania. Want to go over some of the highlights. First of all, for this week, we put up what I'm going to call the pick me up episode this week. I know many people. I know I hit it so well on Monday. I'm going to reveal I was a little frustrated on Monday, but Tuesday, Wei Ting came over. And if there's any benefit to technological errors, it's getting to see Wei Ting in person as he made his way down to this dungeon, and we did 90 minutes of Ask Away, and I really enjoyed this episode. I don't always just point out, hey, this episode was great, and this episode was great. This was the certified seal of approval from John Pollock. I enjoyed this very much. Some great wide-ranging questions. The only podcast, dare I say, that can cover Bobby Hull, Saudi Arabia, and Soda Pop seamlessly.
That is it. Yeah, absolutely. It's our monthly Q&A. And maybe it's cause it's been 2 months since we've done our last one, John. So maybe that's why this one felt so special. You had a lot of great questions, everybody. So, anybody who signs up to postwrestlingcafe.com has access to that as well. Video.postwrestling.com, or if you're an exclusive Apple podcast listener and you subscribe to us through that, then you have access to that as well.
Of course, every Friday night, we are live for Cafe members with Rewind to SmackDown, and we will have multiple editions of Rewind Away this month. The next one is coming out next week with two episodes of Monday Night Raw from February of 1993, a big angle to set up one of the key matches at WrestleMania 9. We're also going to be doing a UK Rampage that WWF put out in the early 90s. That's coming up later this month. And as well, some New Japan reviews on the cafe. And we are going to be traveling to Montreal this month. So whenever we travel, the cameras are rolling, or I should say my phone is rolling. So we will have plenty of extra content this month. Postwrestlingcafe.com. And of course, $6 gets you in the door and access to all of our bonus shows, our archives going back 5 years. I mean, Wei, you could just plop in there and you could spend an eternity just living vicariously through our lives.
If you wanted to. Yeah.
It's an option. I'm putting it out there. Yes. All right. Let us move on. Also this week as well, I will be back with Brandon Thurston on Friday. We're going to go through the WWE financials and Thursday's investors call. I was all ready for Thursday when they had announced it would be out Thursday morning, 8 a.m. I'm like, perfect, no problem. And then they move it to Thursday night. It's like, thank you. Thank you for just ruining my day. So there you have it. That's coming up Thursday night. But I'll be live with Brandon. We're going to go live Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern on the YouTube channel. So tune into that, and we will see. Always news coming out of these investors' calls, and we say it every time that is there will be great intrigue, as there is pretty much every quarter for these calls. What is said, what is not said, and then me and Brandon try to translate what exactly they meant or were trying to hide. So we will decode it all. That's the fun part of these, Wei.
This will be a really interesting one. A lot has happened since the last one.
A couple things over mm-hmm. the last quarter. All right, let's move on to the news. And I would say one of the most newsworthy figures of the last 24 hours or so is Kota Ibushi, who we were discussing on Ask Away. His contract has ended with New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is free. New Japan put out a pretty basic statement stating, with the conclusion of his contract period on January 31st, 2023, Kota Ibushi has departed New Japan Pro Wrestling. Ibushi had been recovering from injury since October 2021. We apologize to Ibushi's fans for the abrupt announcement and join them in wishing Ibushi the very best in all his future endeavors. So Ibushi is now a free agent, and he has already been announced for the collective for the WrestleMania weekend. He has been announced to take on Speedball Mike Bailey at Josh Barnett's Bloodsport 9. And then the next day, he will be part of Spring Break. No announcement yet for his opponent at Spring Break. But that card's, God knows what it will be.
At Spring Break, like the options are limitless, you know. At the top of my list has to be a match with the Invisible Man. We need to see it.
It's a dream match. Very well happen. They're also going to be doing a Speedball against Il Del Vikingo at Spring Break. And as I mentioned on Ask Away, I was going to check up on this, and this is how it's been promoted, and it was confirmed to me by Fight TV that all 11 shows, part of the collective, which includes Spring Break and Bloodsport, come with your Fight Plus subscription, which is, if you have been watching shows, it's $5 for everything that weekend of those 11 collective events. I mean, that is, obviously they are using this weekend as one to just boost up their subscription numbers, which I don't know how you can, even if you're going to watch one show, you're getting beyond your value for $5 compared to what you were paying in years past.
It says there's a 7-day trial. Does that include this weekend as well?
I don't know. I would think that they would prohibit you from being able to use a trial for that particular period, but I don't know the answer to that.
I doubt that they could. How could they?
That was the same deal with WrestleMania as well. And how did that work? Where they had the
I don't know if they did. I don't know if it was prohibited.
Well, something to definitely look into. But regardless, if you're getting dinged for $5, it's you're more than getting your value out
that's,
of
that's
the,
very
this
interesting.
Collective.
And you know what? Really good for the collective to potentially have far more eyeballs on them than ever before.
This will probably be the most watched events that they have ever put on, just given that lower price point and the amount of people. Like, if anyone has been on the fence about Fight Plus, this is the weekend people are going to jump on. the key will be keeping them as well, but that is always going to be the case with these. So anyway, we're at WrestleMania weekend already taking shape. What are just some of your overall thoughts on Kota Ibushi? He is 40 years old now. This will be his first match, at least unless he wrestles before WrestleMania weekend, which he very well could. There's nothing preventing him from doing so, but has not wrestled since October of last year. And what are you looking out of Kota Ibushi? And it seems like he's not in any rush to sign anywhere. It looks like he wants to be a freelancer and do cool stuff.
Well, number one for me, you know, is to see the status of Kota Ibushi now, you know, over a year since the last time we saw him from what sounds like a pretty bad shoulder injury. You know, how does he look the same? And, can he wrestle the same? Now, I don't know if a blood sport match, you know, even if it's against Speedball Mike Bailey, I don't know if that's necessarily, the full Kota Ibushi experience in terms of, like, you know, what we're used to with the high flying and whatnot, but you can guarantee, I'm sure there will be some kicks and some work, you know, attached to that shoulder. So I'm just kind of curious to see him work a different style. Like, he's one of the most creative, adventurous professional wrestlers that I think is currently on the scene. And, it was wonderful to see him on a big stage in New Japan, but I think, you know, if you've seen a bit of this guy's DDT career, you know that he's probably far more interested in things outside of, you know, what might be, you know, a wonderful box that New Japan offers. But I'm very curious to see, especially with him attached to something like a GCW, any indies, you know, that are currently out there, any promotion that's out there. I'm really curious to see creatively what he does. Obviously, there are going to be those questions about where he ultimately lands full time. You know, AEW obviously is going to be the biggest topic. I think WWE shouldn't be, you know, ruled out, at least, you know, as part of the conversation.
I guess you can throw that one out there. If you look at the AEW option, do you think that if he has a resistance to signing any kind of deal, I mean, Tony Khan would seem open to doing a one-off if you have, you know, I'm sure there's no shortage of great ideas of what you can do with Kota Ibushi, but do you want that commitment with a Kota Ibushi to do something more long-term and know that this guy is not going to go somewhere else?
I think there's still a lot of value to have him on for those one-offs, you know, to promote a big pay-per-view match or to promote a big Golden Lovers reunion or to promote a big Kenny Omega versus Kota Ibushi match. You know, having him around here for 1 month, you can do plenty of storytelling and make a whole lot of money for everybody involved. I would actually more expect that than, you know, him signing full-time to AEW. I don't expect him to move back or to move to America whatsoever. I mean, anything can happen, of course, but I see excursions with maybe like a, you know, he's talked about wanting this school that he wants to start up in Japan. I see him keeping Japan as a home base, but, you know, making the occasional yearly excursion to other parts of the world.
What if he just put up a security camera of him running his classes and you were offered a subscription to just watch the classes in progress?
Without understanding the language, yeah, the answer would be absolutely yes. Yes. I just, I mean, you know, anything involving this guy.
Nick Khan traveling to Japan to try and recruit this guy. I mean, that's a movie.
I mean, I only bring up the WWE aspect because, you know, we all remember the CWC and they really wanted him. And who put together the CWC together? It was Triple H, right?
So, I mean, he was giving a lot of false signals, like high-fiving Vince McMahon backstage. They probably thought it's like, oh, we got this guy.
Yes, yes. I can at least see them making a play, you know, and rolling out the red carpet for him in terms of reduced schedule, you know. I could see him, you know, at least being given a pretty nice offer.
Is that Kyle Phoenix?
Kyle Phoenix. Wow. Yeah.
Well, we're moving on. Maybe we will see Kota Ibushi pop up at one of these AEW live events because AEW has now rolled out their plan for non-televised house shows, essentially. AEW house rules that they are promoting as intimate weekend events to kick off March 18th, they're going to do a show in Troy, Ohio. And this has been talked about for a while. This is kind of being spearheaded by Jeff Jarrett, Raphael Morphy. They're kind of the two of the key guys involved in the live events department. But from the press release, Tony Khan today announced the launch of AEW House Rules, a live event series taking place on select weekends in markets across the country. He goes on to say that these non-televised live events will showcase an electrifying mix of matchups featuring the stars of AEW. Each event offers an even more immersive experience for fans, including customized merchandise, unique ways to engage with featured talent, and in-show interactions different from what is featured on televised AEW programming. The first House Rules show will take place Saturday, March 18th in Troy, Ohio at the Hobart Arena and will feature Ohio's own Jon Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Dr. Britt Baker, Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, and many more, with tickets on sale this Friday. So we actually did talk about this as well on Ask Away, of sort of a live event strategy. So very much us kind of setting the table for the news this week.
Yeah.
But for those that didn't hear our show, like, we went over the positives and negatives of running live events in this current environment of professional wrestling, where live events are not this gigantic profitable sector that you would be looking at in terms of just revenue. And I would think that this is one where you're looking for value beyond just profits and losses on individual markets that you can run to. Some of those positives being, number one, you're going to be able to go to smaller markets that you're not going to be bringing your big Dynamites or even Rampages to. Troy, Ohio, probably being a good example of that. It is lower costs. It's also experience for talent. Like, we were specifically noting a Jade Cargill of, you know, that progression of, yes, you get one or two TV matches mixed in with some Dark Elevation squashes, but with a regular rotation of house shows, even if you're adding, say, four matches a month, it's something for this gigantic talent roster that can be out there. And pairing your veterans with some of your inexperienced talent, the talent that's not getting on TV, this gives them more of an outlet. And you're looking for, I think, beyond just the idea of, are these going to make money or not? Because I would say if these are profitable, it's going to be minimal, even for something at the scale of AEW. But yeah, that's sort of my thinking towards these. And sort of, I would imagine, like, this Hobart Arena, like, this is kind of the scope of what we're looking at, and putting, you know, one to two, I would say a couple major stars on top of these. It's not going to be your whole roster, but it is enough that hopefully draws in markets that are less served than some of your TV markets.
The Hobart Arena seems to, at least according to Wikipedia, has a capacity of 3,782. Now, I mean, they don't, obviously don't have to, you know, do that much, but, you know, simply being able to serve a territory that is underserved, I think it's at least worth trying. You know, these tickets appear to be $20. They start from $20, plus fees. So, you know, it seems like they're very affordable. Obviously, there, as you mentioned, John, there's a lot of value that, you know, is outside of the financial aspect of it. But I also can't imagine Tony Khan entering, you know, any sort of business deal without it being a profitable one. I mean,
I'm certain that's the goal, and, you know, you keep costs low. I think, like, customized merchandise, that's something that I think all sports have had a lot of success with, and WWE, that's a big thing on these pay-per-views as well, and even live events, is sort of getting away from just you know, uniform merchandise that we bring to all the cities and making it more, you know, you're looking for ways that you can keep costs down and try and, you know, maximize those numbers that are coming, that are going to spend money on your product, and exposing your product to people that are not getting out to AEW shows in bigger markets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. You know, you have a lot of your talent going out to, and working other promotions led by a guy like a Jon Moxley that, you know, that are probably quite profitable in their local market. So why wouldn't AEW, with their name brand and, you know, like, the stars that they have attached to their roster, try to make a go of it themselves? It makes all the sense in the world. I guess I'm just curious about maybe some of the specifics in financials, especially knowing, you know, WWE's, like, what are WWE's current sort of a house show financials like?
You know? I mean, they're at a point where, especially before the pandemic, you had several of those quarters that the live event section was actually losing money. They are not at that level anymore, but it's, you know, it's still a gigantic difference of what they do at live events versus, like, television. Like, just looking at this month, like, a couple weekends ago, they were in, like, small markets like Erie, Pennsylvania, and Binghamton, New York. They did, like, 3,300 and 2,500. That's on the lower end, but you're typically looking at, I would say, anything in some of these, like, medium to small markets. If you're in the 3,000 to, you know, 4,200 range is typical, unless you're, you know, something really big, like your post Christmas live events and big markets and such like that. But it is at least not at the lower level. They've also cut back on a lot of their live events. And by cutting back, they've eliminated a lot of the smaller drawing markets as well. So they're not running where they were, you know, and they had started to cut back on that even before the pandemic.
Something interesting to maybe make note of, and thank you to John Cena for pointing this out, is that OTT has actually announced Moxley as a part of the show with Scrapper on Scrapper Mania on March 18th, the same day as this supposed Troy show. Now, they are in different time zones, but it's quite the distance, you know, for Moxley to.
Oh, he's not going to be in Ireland for this show and making it to Ohio. So this might be Scrapped Mania for John Moxley. Where he's supposed to be doing back-to-back shows. Like, the Friday is not a big issue. But, yeah, I would assume that this is the AEW show is going to take precedence.
With him being the poster child, yeah, I would probably say so myself.
In Ohio? Yeah. So I don't know how you get to that point where this is being advertised and you're putting this press release out and now he's advertised for somewhere else. So I'm sure we will have an update on that fairly soon. So there you have it. That is AEW House Rules. Would you go to one of these, Wei, if it was near you?
I'm very curious. I actually think I would. You know, like, even knowing from WWE House Shows, the atmosphere tends to be at least fantastic here where we are. And I imagine for AEW, that will probably be the case in several places. And I'm curious to know if these house shows play a bigger role into the storylines, knowing how much AEW, you know, might integrate stories from other promotions sometimes into their own TV content. I have to imagine.
At the beginning, I definitely would. Like, yeah. The last thing I would do is the mistakes WWE made where house shows don't matter, especially for the first few. I would be doing, whether it's just a promo to set up a match on Dynamite or an angle and you show it on television, I would be doing that for the first couple of months, like every now and then doing something where the house show matters and it's showing on television. And that's 20 to 30 seconds of dedicated television time that tells you that these shows, the cameras are rolling and you never know when something's going to happen. When there's buzz coming out of a show and, man, the John Moxley and Darby had this killer match and they put it up on YouTube. Like, there's ways that you can do that. Like, WWE never does that with house shows or anything. Like, they are just an island and they always have been generally. So I would completely do the opposite and make these feel important.
Agreed. Yeah. Do we get title matches? Significant title changes, you know, possibly on these house shows. In Troy.
All to be determined. Yeah. What will happen? The big odyssey here in Troy. Moving on. We didn't get to the ratings note. So I just want to go over some of the highlights over the past week. So going back to SmackDown on Friday, they did a huge number. 2,544,000 viewers and a 0.67 in the demo. This wasn't quite the viewership of the Cena return back at the end of December, but it did beat the Cena return in 18 to 49 and was their highest audience in the key demo since Christmas Day of 2020, which was the show that had the huge NFL lead-in. They were tied for first on Friday night and also did one of their biggest numbers in Canada in I don't know how long. Definitely bigger than anything last year. It was 283,000 viewers. So always a big deal when US and Canadian audiences are in sync with one another. And both were very, very big numbers. Rampage on Friday, it did 458,000 and a 0.14 in the demo. So up 11% in the demo and just slightly down in audience. And that takes us to this week and Raw coming off of the Royal Rumble. For the second straight week, it was the number one show on all of television Monday and topping 2 million viewers for the second week in a row, 2,114,000 with a 0.64 in the demo. So yes, they were down week to week, but that's coming off one of their best numbers in years with the 30th anniversary show. This was, they beat two college basketball games on ESPN and the third hour still did over 1.9 million viewers and a 0.6 in the demo and another big number in Canada, over 288,000 viewers. So the shows are like SmackDown and Raw are extremely hot at the moment. I'm curious, Wei, do you think that there is momentum that gives you optimism? Like, they did plug a lot for next week. They're trying to carry this as much as you can. Do you think it slips below 2 million next week? Does it sort of come back down to earth, or could you see them riding a bit of this?
My feeling is yes. John, you know, I think, you had two big outliers in Raw, Raw's 30th anniversary, and then the night after the Royal Rumble, which is, you know, their second biggest show of the year. The biggest, most attractive thing they have next week is the Becky Lynch Bayley cage match. And I don't think it's, you know, special enough, to perhaps make it feel on the level of the other two. But, you know, I do see a continued sort of a boost in momentum for the company as we get towards WrestleMania. And as they announce any sort of special attractions, I'm sure they'll continue to load it when guys like Cena might, you know, make a more regular return.
How about this question? If 2.5 million from last Friday is the marker, are you going higher or lower for this Friday with the follow up to the Bloodline angle?
Ooh, that's a great question. I mean, for me, personally,
I think they hit 2.5 again.
Yeah, they haven't necessarily, I mean, they've teased obviously some sort of like response from Zayn, but I don't know how significant of a moment that they're really promising us on Friday. So you're saying, do they reach the same level as last week?
Yeah, do they maintain last week's audience, which was a very high number?
I'm going to say slightly under, but okay. You know, still high.
And then NXT on Tuesday, they did 587,000 viewers, down 3% this week, and a 0.13 in the demo, which was up 5%, but very low among women, 18 to 49. It was their lowest audience among women in the demo since September 13th. They also fell in 50+. That likely affected the audience being down just a slight amount as well. So that was the go-home show heading into Vengeance Day on Saturday.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And there's plenty going on this weekend between Vengeance Day on Saturday. We've got several new beginning cards. Saturday's card airs early Saturday at 3 a.m. Eastern. That's the show that has Tetsuya Naito against Shota Umino in the main event. And underneath it has Will Ospreay against Taichi and TJP and Francesco Akira against Yoshinobu Kanemaru and Doki. And if you get up super early to watch that one and you stay up really late Saturday, the next new beginning card, it doesn't start too late. It's at midnight Eastern, late Saturday. And that's got Hiromu Takahashi and Yo, Zack Sabre Jr. against Tomohiro Ishii and Bishamon defending the tag titles against TMDK in the featured matches. So, Karen Peterson and I will be doing a review of the key matches on both of those nights, Sunday for Post Wrestling Cafe members. Also this weekend is Stardom's got a pay-per-view, and Bellator is on CBS. Way it is Fedor Emelianenko's retirement fight, where he is going to face Ryan Bader, and we will see how things go. And then this is kind of cool. They're doing a retirement ceremony for Fedor Emelianenko after the fight ends, which I'm hoping all of this airs on CBS, and they are bringing in all of these legends that I guess it just kind of started organically, where a few of them said they wanted to attend, and Scott Coker revealed on the MMA Hour, this is the lineup of all stars that are going to be showing up for this retirement ceremony. Josh Barnett, Mark Coleman, Randy Couture, Henzo Gracie, Hoyce Gracie, Dan Henderson, Matt Hughes, Quinton Jackson, Chuck Liddell, Frank Shamrock, and Chael Sonnen. All there. To me, honestly, like, this is the most attractive part of this broadcast on Saturday night. I mean, Emelianenko and Ryan Bader will be fine. It's a three fight main card. But they could do something really cool here that appeals more than just strictly fights on television. Bellator is a pretty cold brand. And I mean, granted, this is not like Elite XC getting on CBS, where the barrier for a success is as high as it was in 2008, but I don't see this doing a huge number. But personally, like, I'm looking forward to this retirement ceremony and, you know, having all of these legends involved, because quite frankly, this is something UFC barely does outside of like the Hall of Fame each year. Like, they don't do a whole lot of like honoring their past. It's pretty much limited to the Hall of Fame, and Bellator generally does try and incorporate more of the legends, and preferably when they're not actually fighting, because Bellator did go through that stretch too.
In terms of star power, yeah. I think, I don't know if you've ever had so much attached to the Bellator brand. Realistically, what do you think they'll be having them do, you know, outside of appearing in the crowd?
I'm sure they'll play Leave the Memories Alone, and Fedor will just be crying and crying, and we'll have speeches from each. I mean, it could be as simple as like they just get into the cage and they're all standing around awkwardly in their 2023 fashion.
I'm not expecting speeches from every single one of these guys.
Maybe Chael gives a speech. I mean, that'd be kind of be kind of interesting, I guess. Sure. So,
The photo op will be wonderful.
It'll be a very nice photo op. The other fights on the main card, it's Johnny Eblen defending the middleweight title against Anatoly Tokov, which is a really good fight. If you've been following their middleweight picture, Tokov is the real deal here. And then Saba Hamasi is taking on Brennan Ward. So three fights on the main card and a retirement ceremony, because the UFC is – so this card on Saturday – they have been doing this tournament of South Korean fighters. So this card was originally being targeted for South Korea, but that fell through. So they're stuck with this time slot. So the main card will go live at 1 a.m. Eastern time, late on Saturday night. The prelims start at 10 p.m. Eastern. So this main event between Derek Lewis and Sergey Spivak will probably be around 3:30, 4 in the morning.
Wow.
Yes. Eric Marcotte will be the one Canadian viewer watching this at that time. And I don't know. This is one weekend where you can certainly say Bellator is the big card of the weekend in terms of MMA. So there you have it. Mm-hmm. And free on CBS. All right. I believe that is all of our news. You can always get up to date at postwrestling.com. All of our latest shows, interviews up there on the site, and plenty to come this week. So looking forward to many more shows coming up over the coming days. Wei, we have Dynamite to discuss.
Actually, very quickly, because, you know, we were unfortunately caught off on Monday, I wanted to get some of your thoughts on the Jay Briscoe funeral.
Yes, I would love to talk about that. I watched the entire funeral service on Sunday, and I thought it was incredible to watch this. First of all, Caprice Coleman, I just thought was excellent. He got up there. He just gave a riveting speech. And then it was followed by, Papa Briscoe and, the Briscoe's mother. And they came up. I mean, like, honestly, like, you got emotional watching it. Like, the spirits that these two had. I mean, this was like, they were truly celebrating, their son's life. It was a very sad occasion, but they didn't let you get into that state watching this. Like, this was sharing a lot of stories. And then Mark Briscoe gets up there and he was just amazing. That's the best I can describe this. It was, there were so many, wrestlers, that had come in for this. I mean, it really was a testament to what this individual meant. And throughout this whole thing, like, I've been really blown away just by this family and how they have reacted to all of this. And it's certainly, like, you can understand, like, the power that faith has in people and getting through, like, the ultimate tragedy. And, I mean, whatever your opinions are. And it was very interesting. Like, Mark Briscoe, like, he certainly deciphered between, like, faith that he has in God versus organized religion, that they are very different things. And, you know, I found it to be really profound what he shared. And there are many people that I just couldn't imagine navigating through some of this. And you can have whatever opinions you want about faith, about religion. I think it has been greatly, greatly beneficial for this family to have that.
Yeah. I'm in complete agreement. I thought through this man's speech, his eulogy for his brother, I thought he displayed the most beautiful aspects of faith, of religion. And I'm really happy to see that he's seems to be in such a great place, at least, you know, in dealing with this. And, you know, from all, what Caprice Coleman's account seems like, he was the one consoling, you know, the people backstage.
Yeah, the Young Bucks brought that up too. It was like Mark was the one consoling everybody. Yeah. I mean, if you get a chance to watch, like, the day after last week's match with Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal, Caprice put up a video at the airport with Mark Briscoe, and he just gave like this, just, you know, great message of pretty much just echoing what we're describing here of like somebody that, I mean, this is a guy who is like, you know, he's not putting up some front or just trying to be tough through this whole thing. Like, he truly believes his brother is in a better place and he knows he will see his brother again. And it's like, whatever you have to do to navigate tragedy is what you do. And it just seems to be that they are handling it as best as possible. And I don't know how many people could go through this in the kind of grace that he and his family appear to be doing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's on YouTube. I would certainly, if you have the time to watch it, like it really was like a celebration of this individual, and one where, you know, I'm sure it would be, you know, the kind of ceremony that, you know, he would have been extremely proud to have, like those people talking about him. But definitely a very difficult period that they're going through. We will now go on to Dynamite. So they were in Dayton, Ohio tonight at the Nutter Center, which was a punchline Taz said he's been waiting for 2 months to use when they heard the Nutter Center. Do you know what the Nutter Center is known for in professional wrestling?
No.
What? It has housed an ECW pay-per-view. It was also the site of Bret Hart's one-night performance winning the King of the Ring.
Really? Okay. Wow. Yes. Still around.
Oh, this is an old incredible building. Very okay. old building.
And is Nutter a person?
Yes, it is. I would have to look up his resume to truly should we do a little deep dive here on
I'm kind of curious. Okay, I got it here. Local businessman,
please tell us.
And inventor Irvin J. Nutter donated $1.5 million to Wright State University in 86. And I suppose that he paid for the building, okay, basically.
So it was opened in 1990. That's not – I mean, this opened after the Sky Dome. So it's not ancient.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just rare that like any sort of a venue seems to retain a name that's not business related these days. So
the Nutter.com Center.
Great for Mr. Nutter.
Yeah. Congratulations, Irvin J. Nutter. Well, John Moxley and Hangman Page, were here, and you could have, put up any odds way, and I would not have put money down on the opening of this show, including accompanied by his dad, John Moxley. And John Moxley comes out through the crowd with Wheeler Yuta and his dad. And John Moxley's dad is easily the most intriguing figure that was on Wednesday's show.
Is he the new tattooed man? That, you know, now that we know the identity of the tattooed man, are we done with that mystery? We want to learn more about Mr. Moxley here.
Look at this guy. Like, if you just could see him on his own, and you were like, okay, this is the father of an AEW performer. I mean, how far down are you going before you land on John Moxley? I mean, look at this guy.
I don't know, man. He looks like he might, you know, bleed on a weekend just for fun. You know, this dude looks like he's been through some shit.
I thought he was going to get involved in the match, but he did the walk down and that was about it. But a cool moment here, a father and son moment.
Pretty cool. Yeah, absolutely.
With Mox's kind of surrogate son here. And
three generations of Moxley. Well, Shota really needed to be there.
It's true. Yeah. So they note, like, Hangman is here in visitor territory in Ohio. And Moxley attacks Page on the floor. And they have quite the brawl before they ever get into the ring. This included fighting into the crowd, where Moxley applied a figure four. And then it appeared that Hangman, he grabs what looks to be a beer and throws it on Moxley's face to break the figure four. And that's how Taz identified it as. I hope this was not a beer being tossed into Moxley's face.
Why? What's wrong with that? Oh, yeah, you're right. I didn't.
Of all people, I would think like, maybe this is a, this is a not a good spot to do. But anyway,
I wonder.
He got him out of the figure four. They get ringside, and then the bell rings, and all of a sudden Moxley has been busted open, as it looked like when the chair got thrown at him, he was busted open, and he proceeded to bleed for the rest of this match. And man, this was some thick liquid coming out of this man's cut for the rest of this match. So Paul Turner's checking on the eye and the amount of blood coming out of Moxley. Paige is getting booed and not overtly playing heel, but subtle enough and understanding his role in this setting opposite Moxley. One of the strengths of this match, and there were a lot of them, I loved the struggle that each had just for little things like they're on the apron and Paige is trying for the deadeye and Mox is trying for the pile driver. And it's just like this back and forth, and they're both just, it's like they're not even, neither is allowing the other to, they're not cooperating with the other in a sense. It's just like this real conveying the struggle, between the two just for any little move. And I thought that part was very strong. Paige is telling him to stay down. So Moxley gives him the finger and then hits a cutter. They're trading chops. They're trading suplexes. Then the Death Rider gets blocked. And so Moxley rolls to an armbar. Then on the floor, Hangman goes for his Orihara moonsault and Moxley sidesteps. So Paige just crashes on the floor and gets hit with the lariat the same way he was knocked out in Cincinnati. And they have this lariat battle by the timekeeper's table, ending with Mox taking a pop-up powerbomb through it, but he manages to get in at nine. He's hit by the deadeye and he kicks out. The whole place is chanting for Moxley. Then he lands his lariat on Paige, and Paige hits a small package driver, and the crowd is pretty hot for this. We see a buckshot ducked, a Death Rider get blocked, and Hangman gets him up for a tombstone, goes for the buckshot, and he hits it. But Moxley kicks out. The place is electric. Paige applies the bulldog choke onto the man himself, but Moxley knows the counters to his own holds as he manages to cradle Hangman, stacking him on top to catch him in 16 minutes and 35 seconds, with Excalibur explaining that he knows the counter to the bulldog choke. This was amazing. This is match of the month so far.
I mean, that's saying something. You know, you had a lot to choose from already tonight. So that the fact that it even got match of the night, I think, is definitely an achievement.
This was definitely my match of the night tonight. I thought this was like pay-per-view quality. This to me would have been a high-level G1 match. I thought it was.
I would have said
really
the same
great.
About the main event. I actually would have said the same about Cage versus Takeshita. You know,
I don't know if we would have seen that main event in a G1 setting, but yeah.
I don't know if they've used a thumb.
I don't know if Ishii's ever going to have a tack jacket, but perhaps. Yeah.
But you know, a lot of quality wrestling, and you know, if you chose this one, I think you'd be more than justified. This was an excellent, excellent match. It felt like the third of a trilogy, and it felt like the type of match that would occur when one person vows to knock the other person out in front of their wife. And that's the intensity I felt Paige had all throughout this entire thing. You know, there are a lot of head dropping moves, and it completely played into the idea that this is a guy who wanted to knock the other person out. I think it's rare that you see somebody, not just like evenly matching Moxley, but like in this case, I thought Paige was, you know, especially for that final 5 minute stretch, like dominating John Moxley. He had Moxley beat by the end, and it was just his, you know, little bit of like added sort of like ego that had him do his own finishing move to John Moxley. And of course, making perfectly logical sense that a BCC member would know the counter to his own submission move. I loved how simple it was for him to counter the bulldog choke. It was just like, you know, this guy's choking him here. I'm just going to pull his head down over my shoulder, stack him 1, 2, 3. It felt like the type of move that you can understand maybe him working on with like a Brian or a Regal or something. Intensity in this one was crazy, and especially coming out of Hangman Page, because I think Mox usually has that. But with Page, you know, he's great in ring, but I haven't necessarily seen that same level of killer instinct, and I felt like I saw it tonight. This was great. Really good.
It was my favorite of the three that they've had, and I think that they've left it open that afterwards Claudio and Yuta are separating them, and Moxley is challenging him to keep going, and this really felt like this is not the end, that there is still going to be one more, and you would assume that that's Revolution. And How far away? A month. We have a month, March 5th.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a good time to come back. And maybe it is going to be, you could do the last man standing, makes sense given the story leading into it, but they have a hell of a match to top because I thought this was honestly in a non Omega Osprey year. This is really high for me. And we've had some incredible wrestling already this year after 4 weeks.
For a double babyface feud, I think it's going incredibly well. And I would say both men are, you know, looking strong, even coming out of like, well, technically three matches, but really it's only been two. So I think there's still plenty of like interest in seeing a third, especially if you add a stipulation attached to it. Coming out of this, you know, Paige, at least tonight, was leading more heelish. But do you see any sort of like significant turn from either of them coming out of the feud, or do they both end up as babyfaces still coming out of it?
I think these are two characters that I don't think they need to go all the way. I think they're going to adjust as the story goes. And I think that's kind of these characters too, especially Moxley, that he can weave back and forth. And I think it's a very difficult balancing act to do that without it being inconsistent. But they're really trying to drum in like personalities that can skew to the opponent that they are paired with. And if you can get it right, the balance, you can do a lot of creative things. And I feel like that's what they're doing here. It's not as though Hangman is necessarily a heel, but he was on this night to the benefit of the match that he accepted that role.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Renee is with Jamie Hayter, the Butcher, the Blade, and the Bunny. And way they had an off-screen discussion about no physicality. So they separated here.
In case you were wondering why they weren't fighting each other. Yes.
Is this considered physicality?
A handshake?
Yeah. Okay. It is.
Maybe not. No.
Maybe Renee's being told, this is okay. We'll allow this. And the Bunny was impressed with her win over Amy Sakura last week on Rampage, even though Sakura outshined her, and knows that Jamie doesn't back down from challenges. So she issues a challenge for an eliminator match next week. And Jamie Hayter agrees. I mean, for someone that doesn't turn down challenges, Bunny should have gone all the way and just asked for a title match. Shoot your shot.
I mean, she really should have. I mean, although last week was an eliminator, so I do think they do respect like rankings, you know? She's not just giving them out for nothing.
Well, before we can get any follow-up to that, Renee is getting word that there is an incident going on in the parking lot, and we see footage of Toni Storm attacking Britt Baker as Saraya is speaking into the camera, addressing Jamie Hayter. So Toni Storm and Saraya, this is really our full shift of Saraya and Toni Storm, which is pretty evident last week, but
yeah, this shift
furthering
pretty much came,
the story.
This shift was already there. I'm not like cutting to the back with like a heel beatdown. I continue to be kind of like displeased with how aggressively heelish they've just kind of suddenly became. And beyond that, I think the lack of creativity in showing off their heelishness. I mean, this really felt like a cutscene out of like a career mode from a video game. And suddenly you just have, you know, these characters play like, generic heels, but, and the acting here was pretty weak too, I have to say, from like Hayter and,
I mean, you did pick
Bunny.
This still shot.
Like,
hey, I have a question for you. What color is Renee's dress?
Fuchsia.
Fuchsia. Okay.
What would you say?
Sure. Fuchsia. It's like
what color? What else would it be?
I'll bring this up later. I have a point to make later, but okay. We'll settle on fuchsia. That's fine.
All right.
The Acclaimed come out. Max raps about fighting two guys having a midlife crisis, calling it quits like Tom Brady, and they are Discount Beverly Brothers. And it is the Outrunners, Truth Magnum and Turbo Floyd. They've done a bunch of dark matches and are from OVW. So the Outrunners do their own scissoring in the ring, and they're hit with a super kick, and the Acclaimed hit the leg drop off the top right in the nutter center. Taz notes, and he was so happy about this line. He knew someone would hit someone in the balls on this show. And then they scissor with Billy Gunn, arrival, mic drop, and they win in 54 seconds. More so an excuse to get the Acclaimed in the ring so that they can be challenged by the Guns, who want a title match. The crowd boos this when they are surveyed, so Bowens denies them the title shot. So they argue, and Billy has had enough of this. He's too old for this, and he says, "You guys go ahead and beat the shit out of each other." And he walks up the ramp leaving everybody in the ring when Austin tells Billy to do what he did for their whole childhood. Turn your back on us. And Billy keeps going and says, why don't you go drown your sorrows in the bottom of a pill bottle? And this brings Billy back and he gets into Austin's face. If you thought he was angry, then he started talking and his mic died. And then we had a literal mic drop because he smashed it onto the floor. He was not happy about this as he was given the replacement. Our own Hulk Hogan moment.
Dropping the mic and
Mic cut out last week.
Is that what we're going to call those now? Hogans?
When the mic short circuits, we can call that a Hogan. Okay. Billy says it was a big mistake and he accepts on behalf of the Acclaimed this tag title shot and he walks out. So the Acclaimed are left thinking, hey, what the hell? And I hope this is not Billy, plotting against the Acclaimed. Let's not mess up this act. They messed it around for a while and they got the three of them together, but this will be our tag title match next week. The Acclaimed and the Guns.
I can't see them, you know, breaking up such a nice winning formula. I mean, for what, you know, to add Billy Gunn back to the Gun Club? I don't think the Gun Club needs them, nor do I necessarily think the Acclaimed need Billy Gunn, but I think Billy Gunn has worked far better with the Acclaimed. So, I mean, I see this as more kind of shenanigans, teasing that Billy Gunn might have defected, but in reality, maybe this is just Gunn, you know, playing the ultimate trick on his own sons to be revealed.
They're also going back to Texas the next 2 weeks, so maybe some hot crowds we are in store for. They're in El Paso mm-hmm. next week.
Oh, wow.
Alex Marvez is with Jack Perry, and he asked, what's next for Jungle Hook? They're now 2-0, and Hook basically said, I've enjoyed teaming with him. He had my back when no one else did, but I've won the tag titles. I've been to the top of that mountain. I want to win a singles title this year.
Mm-hmm. So maybe, I mean, either he's serious about this or maybe it's just another tease. I mean, in either case, I probably, you know, believe that he's going to want to be a single star, or they want him to be a single star. Maybe this is just to kind of tell the audience to not to get our hopes up for another Jungle Hook reunion anytime soon. They're not going for the tag team championships because I don't think it's necessarily beneficial for either of their careers. So, he's promising to win a singles championship. Could that singles championship be the FTW title?
Oh, okay. That's starting at a square one of the singles titles, but yeah, maybe you could eventually do that. I mean, it will be, I think they really have something here with Jungle Hook. Mm-hmm. That's one way to go about things.
Yeah.
I was going to ask a completely off the wall question. So finish your real thought.
No. I'm ready for the off the wall question. Yeah.
Well, if we go back to that photo, I was going to ask you if this was Zoolander, what would you call these poses?
Oh, okay. The Dylan from Perry here. Marvez would be
Brandon.
Okay. I was going to go with the Ziering.
The Ziering. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe a little Joe E. Tata look.
I didn't watch that many episodes.
That was Nat. That was Nat, the Peach Pit owner.
Oh, okay. All right.
Remember Nat? Okay.
No, not really.
Konosuke Takeshita against Brian Cage, who has Prince Nana in his corner. Cage powerbombs Takeshita into the post on the floor. Back in the ring, Takeshita hits a blue thunderbomb as Excalibur explains the lineage of where it's been handed down from Jumbo Tsuruta to Jun Akiyama to Konosuke Takeshita. Takeshita misses a flying knee in the corner. Cage here with a deadlift superplex. And then we see a jumping knee caught as Cage hits a buckle bomb. Takeshita does his own counter into a Liger bomb for a two count, and then Cage with a backdrop driver, discus lariat, Takeshita back with a pair of brainbusters, and then an avalanche version off the turnbuckle, drills him with a knee, and it's the knee strike that wins it for Takeshita in 10 minutes and 5 seconds, and Takeshita's first big Dynamite victory.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really, really excellent match between two heavyweights here. Every move so impactful, and I think flawlessly executed between the two of them. Ended up being a really great showcase for Takeshita, who seems to finally be getting a real push. We'll see how long it extends because, you know, he's running up against the wall next week. But, you know, at least for 1 week, he gets to have a win on Dynamite. I thought it was an excellent match.
Renee is with the Jericho Appreciation Society, and Jericho explains that Ricky Starks lost to the JAS, not to a baseball bat. And he has said that Ricky Starks wants a chance to face Jericho again. And from there, we get Garcia and Guevara introducing us to the Garcia-Guevara gauntlet, where Ricky has to go through a series of opponents before he can get to Jericho, where he'll have to first face Big Hand Ange, Cool Hand Ange, Matt Menard, then either Guevara or Garcia, and then can face Chris Jericho as Jericho threatens to, quote, rip his ass. Mm-hmm. Now, before I get your thoughts on this, Way, what color is Renee's dress?
Okay, I see what you mean. I mean,
this was glaring to me during the show. I was like, it has changed here. I don't know if this was maybe a white balance issue or something, or a lighting issue.
The screen I'm presenting happens to be somebody's photo of a TV set. So I don't know if we could buy this as sort of a proper, accurate color representation, but
I mean, this is how I saw it on television.
So you saw red.
Yes.
And in the other shot, it was more of a pinkish fuchsia.
Well, you said fuchsia before. That was your determination.
They are very close colors. And depending on the lighting, depending on the light balance, things could look a little bit different. Here's a better shot.
I was just curious. I wanted your intricate eye to
I think
detect.
This could still be fuchsia, you know? I mean, it's very close to Jericho's vest, which I would probably suggest would be
it's probably a fuchsia vest.
You think that's I don't know about that. But let us know in the comments below. What color is Renee's dress?
So we have several weeks before the pay-per-view. Do you think Ricky Starks is going to get through Parker and Menard and then either Guevara or Garcia to get
for once? I would like to see them. I'd like to see him lose and fail. And then what they would do for the pay-per-view. Then Jericho would have no match on the pay-per-view.
They really do like this concept of just going through step one to step two to step three, which is fine. I just feel like, I know Ricky Starks said he wants another shot at Jericho, but like, why?
It's very simple. It's too similar when you have like the
you're doing the same MJF thing with Danielson. And it's also like, we've seen him beat Jericho. He got his big win over Jericho. So it's sort of like, I'm not really on board for this big journey.
He's mad. He wants to beat Jericho again, and Jericho's denying him, you know, that pleasure. But you're right. Like, maybe the booking of Jericho losing to Starks has been kind of, did they need Starks to beat Jericho that one time?
And
maybe
ready.
Not. Yeah. Yeah. Although you can make the argument that, you know, like the Andretti win really helped so much that I think that was worthwhile, because otherwise,
I'm not denying it. I'm just saying, like, this is to me building up to Starks, what, getting another win? Is it going to be that much more impactful than the first one?
They've embarrassed him so much. You know, they've had, they attacked him with a bat, you know, this is just a chance to completely vanquish the entire JAS. But maybe he'll fail, John. You know, maybe it'll be Daddy Magic that pins Ricky Starks and ends the journey. Then
maybe they'll have a rip your ass match.
And what would be, tell
that
me?
Was
what
a, that the, was a weird threat. He said, "I'm ready to rip your ass."
I think it's the type of threat that is meant for wrestling podcasters to recap in question.
Then we went to the basketball court where the Elite are with their newfound stablemate, Kenny Omega, who is back to play basketball. And they said to Top Flight, bring AR Fox next week and shoot your shot. And with that, the ball was passed to Nick, who drained this shot.
God, this guy. I mean, I wouldn't doubt that this was a one take. You know, that this was the only take that they needed to do something like this. Cause, he is quite the remarkable, I guess, weekend basketball player, I believe.
Well, then at this local community center, the Firm entered and they made fun of the Elite having the week off. So Ethan Page says that we make our employees work every week. And they issue a challenge to the Elite for Rampage, and Omega accepts the challenge, and Callis then refers to an NFT And Excalibur notes that NFTs aren't a thing anymore.
Are they not? Huh. You never bought an NFT?
No, no. I don't know if they ever really were a thing. I guess they were a thing because people were spending a lot of money on these things. But I don't know. Stunned that these have turned out to be not quite what was envisioned. But yes, we've got the Elite Wrestling on Rampage on Friday.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a really nice hook for Rampage. That's not Hook. I think it's, you know, it's a rare occurrence, appearance by Kenny Omega on Rampage. And the first time that the Elite are having, a trios match since their, championship win. So, oh, it's for the titles even. Okay. Well, there you go. Not even an eliminator, John. They're actually just doing this for the
championship. See, they shot their shot. Went out for the big challenge and they got it.
I mean, you know, they could have promoted a basketball match, you know, a 3-on-3 basketball match. And I think
Seriously thought that's where this was going. I thought they were going to challenge them to a basketball match.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I think it would be even a bigger upset than what we will probably see on Friday.
They're going to play horse for the first 20 minutes of Rampage.
Oh, wow. I'd sign up for that.
It would probably do really well, to be honest. Yeah. It's just these six playing horse.
Yes.
Bryan Danielson against Timothy Thatcher. Timothy Thatcher, when this guy was in Evolve, he was one of the most polarizing figures. There were sides that loved him and sides that couldn't stand this guy. Like the whole like catch point influence on Evolve. I was always a big fan of Timothy Thatcher.
What's the criticism? I'm curious.
It was just a lot of like the heavy MMA grappling based, matches that they were doing. And it's not everybody's favorite style, but when done well, I think it's really captivating stuff. And I always enjoyed him. And I think over time, I think Thatcher has, won more people over, but it was at a time he was like this very divisive figure, like circa 2016, 2017. I thought he was incredible in this match. And it felt like Bryan Danielson was just in wrestling heaven for 14 minutes here. Danielson's got a taped shoulder, so it's not as though he's lost the use of his arm. It's just he's got a shoulder injury.
Oh, the tape does wonders.
I wanted him in like basically a body cast having to wrestle a match with no use of an arm.
I mean, we could be headed towards that direction, you know. They could peak the injury maybe for the pay-per-view.
They did show more NOAH footage of Thatcher and emphasizing the Fujiwara armbar. That's his specialty. And noting that his hero was Johnny Valentine. And Tony Schiavone was just so excited to talk about Johnny Valentine. Brought up the plane crash from 1975 that Valentine was in with Ric Flair, among others, Tim Woods. Thatcher goes for the arm. Pretty much all of Thatcher's offense was getting control of this arm. He constantly had like a hammer lock and was just holding on to the wrist. Everything was designed to just break this man's arm. And Danielson was, he goes for a bow and arrow. It's broken by Thatcher gripping the fingers and putting pressure on the shoulder. And Danielson would just scream in pain, selling this injury. Danielson tries for the lapel lock again, Thatcher back to the arm, and he continues to have the hammer lock applied as he's drilling him with shots to the body. Eventually, Danielson headbutts him off the turnbuckle and lands a missile drop kick and goes for the backslide. Thatcher kicks out of the backslide and into the Fujiwara, just every counter back to this submission. And Danielson has some success using head kicks and kicks to the body. And then Thatcher runs Danielson into referee Stephon Smith in the corner, prompting MJF to come down wearing the ring when Takeshita, in a hoodie, jumps MJF and fights him to the back. The Fujiwara is on Danielson. He gets his foot on the rope, and Danielson hits a released German, ducks the clothesline, Busaiku knee, and pins Thatcher in 13 minutes and 41 seconds. This was a great match, but an awesome just storytelling match as well. Like Thatcher was just an excellent, excellent opponent for Danielson.
I think he was a fantastic choice for this storyline at this point in time, you know, to be able to find a special attraction technician that could have this style of match focusing on a single body part, I thought was incredibly effective. I thought, I think if you've seen Timothy Thatcher, you kind of know. I asked for clarification on that maybe criticism at the beginning, John, because I could see people maybe sensing that about this one. It's a fantastically, like, I think fun style to watch if you appreciate this kind of style. But,
It's not going to be for everyone.
I don't know how much the crowd at the Nutter Center necessarily connected with this. And I say that at least in comparison to like a Bandido match or a Takeshita match that we've seen with Brian receive incredible ovations. This was, you know, certainly a bit more subdued. And it could also just be down to the audience not being as familiar with the Timothy Thatcher.
Which was a risk. Like Timothy Thatcher is not a pick that you would be envisioning. It's like a really risky pick to go out there. Like, yes, this guy had some NXT exposure, but he's not a name that you're bringing in that's going to be lighting up everybody's world. It was certainly like a left field pick, but I thought it was a really cool potential matchup. And again, it's going to come down to kind of your diet for this type of wrestling. I really dig this style. So I really, really enjoyed this.
I did too. I mean, I think, again, for the type of story that they're trying to tell with MJF focusing on Brian's shoulder, I thought it made all the sense in the world. And it was a fantastic example of this type of match. Do you think Thatcher makes other appearances in AEW?
This, to me, would certainly prompt a callback. And I really kind of even like him as like MJF's like hooker that he can bring in when he's got an issue with somebody. To the point that I almost wish like he got more credit for the arm injury than Brian Cage did last week. That would like ensure a return here, but I would certainly think like there's an opportunity to bring him back again when the time is right. MJF and Takeshita are still brawling in the back. MJF's got some weapons and then gets his head drilled into the table before they're separated. And MJF yells, "I'll kill you." To which Renee, with her trusty earpiece, informs us that Tony Khan has made an eliminator bout between the two for next week.
Yes, yes.
Is this as clear cut as MJF just getting a win going into the Danielson match? Match, could you get creative here with Takeshita?
You'd have to do it in a way that wouldn't take the heat off of, Danielson getting that victory. I don't think I would do it. I would love to see Takeshita. I mean, I think we're seeing a moral victory situation here for Takeshita, there's still, I think, a lot
of. What if he won with the Busaiku knee and then going into the pay-per-view, it's like MJF can be beaten with this move.
But if we've seen Takeshita, if we've seen MJF get beaten, I don't know if that's, they protected MJF so well here, with infrequent appearances. When was the last time he even took a loss?
The Punk program?
The first time he lost to Punk, MJF.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Or actually, I guess he lost the second time too.
Sean.
Yeah. You're right. Sorry, let me just look this up because I don't want to be bothered by other people. His last loss was, he won, well, Wardlow back in May. So right, he hasn't had too many matches since then. But since becoming champion, I don't necessarily see them doing that. But I'm looking forward to the match.
I don't think him losing would harm him all that much. But it's not. Make or break either. I'm interested to see the match for sure. I guess
more so for Takeshita, I'm kind of curious where they go off of this because they're starting to build some really good momentum here. And I think he will most likely have to lose to MJF. How do they maintain that momentum to keep him on a positive trajectory to, I guess build him up to what, like a TNT title level? Joe versus Takeshita, I think would be so awesome.
They've also kept the Don Callis stuff to Dark Elevation. Like, they have not integrated
Have they continued it?
Still? There's been some continuation of it, yeah. And yeah. I mean, online, they're still like that.
Right.
Like, Callis is constantly pushing it, but it has not made it into the body of Dynamite or Rampage yet. Swerve is with his mogul affiliates, and he mentions his program with Dustin, who is not here. So he is targeting someone else that has been a beneficiary of nepotism. Brian Pillman Jr. So he's going after people's kids now. That's the game. And we now have our names of Parker and Trench.
Trench is the man's name.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Looks like a trench.
In what way? How does he look like a trench?
I mean, that's the name that comes to mind. Perhaps. Yeah.
Was it worth the wait, John? All this mystery surrounding this man's name?
Maybe it was a copyright issue. Maybe they had to clear Trench.
Trench. Okay. Anyway, we got the name.
I guess we got the name after months. So exciting. Yep. Then we had quite the moment. Excalibur is running through what's coming up next week. And then now Renee is standing with the AEW World Champion. And we cut to Lexi Nair with Rouge, Preston Vance, and Jose the Translator. So he was 0 for 2 on this throw. At least MJF did make an appearance here, but I was there were some rough edges here.
There might have been an updated rundown that like was not properly passed around. A bit of an embarrassing segment.
MJF enters with a briefcase and he tries to speak Spanish, but the one language he does know is universal. It's cash. So he gives them a briefcase full of money and says he has 5 more filled to the brim if Rouge can beat Danielson by any means necessary and rip his arm off and beat him over the head with it. I would definitely want clarification if he means literally or figuratively next week to get all that money. Because I don't know if I could ensure that I could break his arm. I don't know if I could rip it off out of the socket and beat him with it. That'd be really tough to do, even on TNT with their lax hardcore style rules.
I just don't know if it'd be worth the trouble. Yeah, it's a lot of money, but I mean, you're looking at jail time for that type of, assault.
Rouge is not a fan of MJF and gets up close to him and gives a promo in Spanish, to which MJF looks at Jose, translate, dipshit. And Jose just says like a word or two, and MJF doesn't think he's getting the full translation and says, you don't have to like me, but we can still do business together. And we walk off, and it is Bryan Danielson and Rouge next week, which is all right.
I think it's a really solid match.
Okay. Yeah.
But I mean what, maybe what it will think? Be a step down from the previous announcement.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I'm pretty like, I think Danielson versus like,
I think Rouge gets like not ample opportunities, but the ones he has, it's been mixed results. So this is another chance for him
had
to have
no bad matches in AEW.
Rouge?
I don't think he's had any bad matches.
What's your favorite Rouge match in AEW?
I can't really name. I'm really bad at picking favorites, but I remember enjoying quite a number of them. I would never say that he's had a bad match in AEW.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not thinking this is going to be poor. It feels like a match so far.
Okay. It'll be an interesting mix of styles. John hates it. So, I think it'll be the best match of all time.
I didn't say I hated it, but, we'll see. I wasn't going, oh, wow.
In terms of star power, it maybe doesn't feel as special as some of the others. Yeah.
Jay Cargill is going for 50-0 against Red Velvet. They mention an interesting thing here, that it's American Heart Month and all the talent went through CPR training earlier today at the arena.
Very important.
It was very good. Yeah. Like this is, to me, something that especially all referees should be, regularly taking training
in. I would say every adult should probably learn some CPR and the Heimlich,
I've gone through 2 training classes since having children. Like I did it once and it was such an eye opener for me that I was like, I can't believe I didn't know this before, and did it a second time just to refresh. I'll probably do another one because it's been a few years, but I would encourage anybody, especially if you're a parent, or in some athletic field where something could go awry, like having CPR training is to me something that should be taught in all schools.
I wish CPR was promoted as heavily as the iPhone 13,
training to be able to unlock an iPhone.
Yes, absolutely. You should have to perform CPR on your phone in order to unlock it.
Yeah. Or at least make a TikTok video about CPR training.
Somebody should get on that.
So Red Velvet jumps her. Kiera Hogan eventually comes out. She attacks Layla Gray and gets ejected by the referees. And Red Velvet hits a spinning roundhouse kick and has a visual cover on Jade Cargill. The whole crowd is counting 1, 2, 3. But Aubrey Edwards is distracted. And when she turns around to count, Jade kicks out. And Red Velvet applies the short arm scissor. And she gets deadlifted up and then turns that into a sunset roll up. But Jade stops her, hoists her up, turns her into Jaded, and hits it for the win in 7 minutes and 11 seconds. I thought what Jade to me has greatly improved in, like her finishing sequences have become pretty elaborate and she's like sticking the landing pretty strong with these endings. Like they're more than just get her up for Jaded and hit. It's like a several step process now. And it's the part of the match that the crowd peaks for by design. And I think that's an element of these matches that have are continuing to improve. She wins. She has 50-0. And then she is, her daughter was in the front row and she carries her daughter to the back.
Daughter was crying, you know, like super emotional. So that was,
why would you boo this woman? What is there to boo about Jade Cargill?
Honestly, at this point, like, yeah, like I kind of question it. And
she got jumped from behind by Red Velvet, overcame that adversity to come back. And then her second, who is allowed to be there, just gets attacked unprovoked. And then she still manages to win this match in front of her daughter and achieves this 50-0 record.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, dude. I haven't really been pleased, I think, with this. Like she's looked like such a star, and I think in these sort of 50 matches, she's accomplished a whole lot. But I haven't really been pleased with the amount of feuds and story that they've crafted for her. I thought Red Velvet, you know, for number 50. This felt pretty underwhelming for, at least in terms of like a big deal. Like it was an absolute foregone conclusion, I think, to everybody what the outcome of this was going to be. And, I don't know if you have anybody, you know, on roster that I think, you know, could be that sort of, could make that big of a difference. But I would say it's at this point, like where we should be seeing her in the mix with, you know, people like a Toni Storm, people like a Britt Baker, you know, it seems like she's just like kind of sequestered off into this, other division. And, you know, I thought for 50, they needed something bigger.
What's the next milestone? Is 75 a milestone or do we have to wait to 100?
I feel like 100.
Yeah.
Okay. Or maybe 72.
72. What's significant about 72?
Just a made up number, whatever.
The Summit Series.
Yeah. Yep.
Renee is with Britt Baker. She says she's fine after the attack. And Ruby is there to check on Britt to see if she's okay. And Britt accuses Ruby of where her allegiance lies, saying that you know Toni and Soraya a lot longer than you've known us. And Ruby continues to be caught in the middle.
Yeah. Who's she with, John? Who do you think?
I don't know.
You trust her? Is she an original or is she a WWE loyalist?
She could lean either way. I mean, she has ties to both sides, so this is going to be a real soul searcher for Ruby Soho, who to align with.
We'll see.
Rampage on Friday, the aforementioned Elite versus Ethan Page, Matt Hardy, and Zay for the Trios Championships. Swerve Strickland against Brian Pillman Jr. for being the son of somebody. Saraya and Toni Storm will be in action, and our main event, to prove me wrong, Roosh versus Christopher Daniels, which I'm sure will be a very good match, to be honest, on Friday. Next week on Dynamite, so it's Eliminator Night, MJF against Konosuke Takeshita, Jamie Hayter against The Bunny, then we have Bryan Danielson against Roosh, The Acclaimed against The Guns for the tag titles, and the start of the Garcia Guevara Gauntlet. So I guess this means Angelo Parker against Ricky Starks, who they explained would be step one.
Yes, correct.
I think Starks will win.
I know.
I think he's going to get to face Matt Menard. That's my prediction.
Anything can happen. You got to tune in to find out.
Well, everything happened in this main event between Darby Allin and Samoa Joe. No holds barred for the TNT Championship. At the beginning of this, Tony Schiavone is questioning if this was a smart move for Samoa Joe to face Darby Allin in a no-holds-barred match. It might favor Darby. And Taz was out of his mind. He's like, are you kidding? Darby, the favorite in this match? Tony's like, he's crazy. Joe's crazy, too. So Taz was not giving Darby a prayer here. And Darby comes out. This dude is wearing a thumbtack jacket.
Where do you get these? Hot Topic?
Thumbtack jacket. I feel this was homemade. I don't know too many stores that could sell these.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
Joe brings out a table from underneath the ring, and Darby hits his crazy tope, drilling this chair into Joe's head and busting him open. So more blood on this show. Then they fight into the crowd. They go up the stairs and Darby gets tossed onto these steps. I cannot fathom what this individual is going to be, how he's going to be getting around in 5 years. I'm not even saying when he's like 40. I'm saying like 5 years from now. It just feels like, I don't know, I'm almost at the point of uncomfortable of how much damage this guy is inflicting on himself. And that's the whole purpose of this title reign, is how badly I can hurt myself in these matches.
I mean, do we know that he intends on wrestling for that long?
I'm pretty sure that he intends on getting up from bed 5 years from now. And I think he's mortgaging that ability right now. I'm not even talking about wrestling.
We plenty of people have said that sort of thing about professional wrestlers, you know, in their youth. Sometimes the truth actually, like, it turns out the way that I think, people predict. Jeff Hardy seems to be walking around. Is he walking out great? I don't necessarily know, but you know, he's at least probably able to get up in the morning. What can you do? Like, it's, you know, I'm sure plenty of people have told him plenty of warnings, and I don't think you're going to stop a guy who's this determined.
Joe lands his STO out of the corner. They're back in the ring at this point. He lifts up Darby in the ring and just violently throws this man to the floor, over the top rope and out. This would have been the most vicious Royal Rumble elimination on Saturday had this been in the match. Mm-hmm. And Joe then dumps him onto two chairs in the ring. He's just brutalizing this guy. He goes for a power bomb onto the chairs, but he is stopped with powder thrown into his eyes, with Darby following up with a code red, and goes to get the tack jacket. But the tacks are all tangled with the arms. So he has a hell of a battle trying to get this tack jacket on, and he can only get so much onto him. This was like the tack scarf. And then he comes off the top with a coffin drop onto Joe, trying to hit him with the tacks. So then Darby goes to the floor and he takes out like an X-Acto knife, and he starts cutting up the canvas all around the ring, and he's just doing this so quick, and he's just chopping up the ring to expose the wood underneath the padding. And he goes into the ring and he misses a somersault flip into a table on the floor onto Joe. So he crashes through this table. Joe then lays down the tack jacket in the ring, power bombs Darby onto the tack jacket, then wraps this jacket around his face, and Darby breaks free by thumbing him in the eye. There's chair shots from Darby, climbs to the top, and Joe sends Bryce into the ropes, knocking Darby off balance, which leads to a muscle buster onto the exposed wood, and Joe pins Darby in 16 minutes and 14 seconds to regain the TNT championship, and giving this poor ring crew a hell of a changeover to Rampage moments later.
I mean, it made their job easier, didn't it? Darby already did half the work.
I guess it's just a case of starting from scratch here, and removing the canvas, and they still got to tie that whole thing down.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. I think I would say maybe, worth it, you know, at least for this TV match. It was, yeah, you're right. Every time I watch a Darby Allin match, you know, you get a little bit afraid for the man's future or his next 2-3 years. But you knew, like, a guy who was on this crazy 5-week stretch that he was traveling to Japan and wrestling in Muda's retirement match among them. You knew he was going to end this run, you know, pretty spectacularly, and he kind of threw everything in there. This was the end of the trilogy with Joe, the end of his second reign as TNT champion, and what an incredible 5 weeks. I thought the guy took more risks in those 5 weeks than most people in their entire careers. It was a spectacular match. Yeah.
And then the final scene is Wardlow making his return without the ponytail and attacking Joe and trying to powerbomb him, but Joe escapes, and so a security member gets powerbombed out to the ring onto the other security members. So Wardlow is back for revenge, and that looks to be the title program, probably for Revolution.
Probably, yeah. You know, it, I have to say it's a little bit harder for me to get that interested in a Wardlow Joe match or feud again, you know, especially after seeing this wonderful trilogy with Darby. I really feel like Darby has overshadowed my interest, at least, in Wardlow. And I feel like they were really reliant on the Wardlow formula, you know, his first run as TNT champion. And I wonder how much they've evolved, you know, Wardlow beyond that in this run. I worry that he'll come across, you know, a little bit generic, especially when you have such a colorful roster now in AEW with so many fully developed wrestlers. You know, what do they have in store for Wardlow? Can he be a more viable, more entertaining champion than Joe has been?
I am hoping that there are some adjustments to Wardlow. I don't think you have to make gigantic changes, because I think like there is a solid foundation there with this character. But I do agree that I feel he, you know, he did run into a stagnant period for a while. I do feel you're coming off some of these matches that you just cannot match. So in the absence of trying to top these TNT title matches, you have to go and do something totally different. And that is the challenge for these two. It's like, here are two monsters that are not Darby Allin that you can have a different type of program over and hopefully do something different that makes you appreciate these matches in a different way. But I'm just looking for some evolution with Wardlow as well. It's not even chasing after, it's a title that he has already held. So I think it's not so much even the chase that's going to be fueling this run from a fan perspective.
And I don't know if there's, I mean, is there a hair versus hair match to be had? You know, the ponytail's already off.
Do you have a shot of Joe? Can we get a look at the, at what he's working with in 2023?
There's not much, you know?
Like, I don't know. Like, and to be quite honest, does Wardlow not look like much better without the man bun?
I think if you were to, you know, cast him on The Bachelor, the answer would be yes. But I mean, as a professional wrestler, he looks a little bit generic to me without the ponytail.
Okay. Well,
but looks are subjective, John.
You know? I mean, he didn't spend any time, like, this was over a month ago. It's not like he seems to be aggressively working to grow this thing back either.
I don't think he is. I think it's gone. I mean, it'll be gone. I mean, that's like 5 years of growth right there.
Okay. And that was Dynamite. Quite the show that had, I would say, three pretty spectacular matches with Moxley, Hangman, Danielson, and Thatcher. You could throw in Takeshita and Cage as well. And then that main event, which was totally nuts. So, yeah. I mean, four pretty high-level matches on the show.
Agreed. And they didn't even have to use Kenny, you know, who was able to return. So you're getting Kenny on Friday.
Smart. I think we talk about this with Rampage. This is something you need to do every now and then. So yeah, mm-hmm. A reason to tune into Rampage. And I don't think Saraya wrestling on Rampage is a small thing either. Like, I think that's still, you know, there is some star power on Rampage this week. Not to mention Roosh.
Roosh. Yeah. The John Pollock's most hated wrestler. Yes.
All right. Well, what did everyone think of Dynamite? Do you have questions? Do you have super chats? We are here to provide our super answers.
We do not have any super chats today, but we do have feedback from forum.postwrestling.com. And we start things off with Cody from Maine. Would you like me to start, John?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right. Cody from Maine says, just wanted to say, as a fellow content creator, I appreciate the troubles you two went through to provide Rewind to Raw this past Monday. Would have been more than justified to stop the show. Sort of, John, if bringing it up is a sore subject. Well, we've been perfectly fine thus far, Cody, so I think we can discuss it right now. Appreciate that. And appreciate anybody who sent us, you know, very kind messages to tell us to feel a bit better about, you know,
messages. I got none.
I'll forward them to you, John. There was a lot on tonight's show, even by Dynamite standards, but I really enjoyed it. I love what they're doing with Takeshita. Brian Cage, too, for that matter. I understand if people were upset with him losing another big match, but if he wasn't in the role, dare I say someone like Miro would be. And I'm sure that wouldn't be a well-liked decision. Timothy Thatcher is phenomenal. He has been for a long time, but his style is such a breath of fresh air for me. And I hope Darby can walk when he's 40. Those memes of him pushing around Keiji Muto in a chair are a lot less humorous after a performance like tonight's. Good to see Wardlow back too, although I'd have waited until next week. I guess being in Ohio was a primary reason for the timing. Just a weird spot for him to wait until the end of the match before attacking. Oh, I didn't. Yeah, I forget that he was a Ohio guy. I mean, wasn't that weird? I mean, you know, he wanted the match.
No, not at all. You want to do the big angle at the end, and you know, it's you're getting close now to the pay per view, and I'm sure you have like your weeks plotted out of where you want to be storyline wise, and it made the sense to bring him back this week and get the feud rolling.
It would also make sense that you would want to beat Joe for the championship rather than Darby.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So, okay.
Let's go to Jomo. I thought this was Brian's dullest match in his trials. I'm going to disagree with that one, but in his MJF series, but everything else hit, in particular the opener. I get the purpose of the match, but I still found it blah. Mox and Hangman really feel like two of the absolute top guys, even above Brian and MJF. There's an electricity when they're together. Putting the Elite on Rampage is a way to make me watch, even if it's against the Matt Hardy vortex. I really think part of the reason Dynamite has been so hot lately is the commentary. Tony Schiavone is always impressed with everything, where JR was impressed with nothing. And Taz and Excalibur's dark rapport on TV really works wonders with the more PWG-ish wrestling product that they are offering.
I think this is the better team, but I wouldn't personally go as far as to say like JR's absence has made that big of a difference, you know, in my enjoyment of the show. I think it's just it's high quality matches, it's, you know, maybe an improvement in storytelling, it's having the Bucks back, you know, it's having the Elite back. That to me might probably means a whole lot more than, you know, the change in commentary, which a lot of times I don't necessarily even think about. Something I did think about, and I paused last time after the last question because I wanted to bring this up, but there's been, to me at least, a noticeable lack of ROH title defenses on TV as of late. Is that something that's been apparent to you? And do you think that's just, you know, to answer for some of the criticism that people have?
I mean, it was stated as much that once they got through Final Battle, like that was going to be sort of our ROH involvement. And I think they had the pay-per-view to get to. And I think they did understand those complaints. Like this was cramming a lot of other stuff into the show. And this was becoming, you know, as much a vehicle for ROH as AEW. And I think it has been noticeable. And I think it was pretty much laid out when you heard going into Final Battle that, you know, afterwards it was going to be. And I think it's been, honestly, I think it's been an easier to digest program where we're not pushing all these different titles as well. And you're, even though it's the same players involved, I do think it has made a difference as well, just solely focused on your in-house championships, which are already a large number to start with. But the question will come up again as you get closer to that Supercard of Honor show in March and how much AEW real estate is used to promote that show.
True. Let's go up next to Muggin, who says, a solid show with the opener, Danielson, Thatcher, and the main event carrying it. It appears that the Starks-Jericho feud is cannibalizing Friedman's shtick of making their foes jump through hoops to get a match. I hope Darby can still be able to walk by the time he's 35. The amount of punishment he went through was nuts. Jade Cargill is 50-0 with no real challenge in sight. I kind of wish Statlander is healthy.
Okay. And Miguel, in his promo in Spanish, Roosh said he was going to beat Brian, then get the reward money, and lastly, at the first sight MJF shows weakness, he will take his championship. Do you think Roosh will be the next champion, or is that just a throwaway line in his promo?
I like that a lot. That's wonderful.
Roosh shooting his own angle would not surprise me.
I don't think it was that at all. I think they definitely alluded to it. I thought it was a lovely way to, you know, throw that tease in there. I mean, I could see a title challenge, but I don't think he'll be.
Like MJF acknowledged it too. I mean, he said we don't have to get along to do business together. So, And honestly, you should have people all gunning for the championship, even if it's not something you are immediately planning for. Like every person on the roster should have that goal in mind. And it makes the title feel, it is the ultimate prize. It trumps whatever your story is going on, your tag team, your feud. It's everyone. That's why they are here. That is the goal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll see how this match goes next week, John. Maybe he'll lose or maybe he'll win.
Maybe he wins and we're not going to get Danielson at the pay-per-view. Maybe it'll be Roosh and MJF in San Francisco.
Could be.
Possible. Okay. Well, thank you for the feedback. Thank you for everyone tuning in live. Wei, how do I look? How do I sound?
You look and sound wonderful. Maybe a final thank you to the fine folk at Rogers Communications for providing a stellar connection for John Pollock's basement today.
I want to give a thank you to a very special person who helped fix all these problems. I want to give a shout out to my main man, Oscar, who got on this afternoon and he helped me fix this. He was seated right there and he navigated me through all of this. So a big, big shout out to Oscar.
We're about 5 years away from, I think, him completely, you know, revamping the IT in my house. I mean, at the rate these kids seem to be learning this stuff. So I'll tell him you said thank you.
When are we back, Wei? We've got Friday. I've got the show with Brandon at 1 Eastern. And then Wei and I have Rewind to SmackDown Friday night, 11 Eastern, after Rampage and SmackDown. I think both shows will be notable.
Yeah.
A big Elite match and SmackDown coming off of the Rumble. Like, both should have some important things on each program.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And we'll talk about all the news, of course, as there always seems to be plenty of stories.
And then Wei's coming over here on Saturday to watch the Fedor retirement fight with me and the ceremony afterwards. So we're not doing a show for that. We're just going to hang out together and we'll watch the Fedor fight on CBS. And you can stick around for New Beginning. We'll watch that right after Bellator.
I will do that as soon as you come over and we watch all the Oscar nominations together. Every single, all 10 movies.
Okay, let's start with Tar.
Okay, sounds good.
Good night.